The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW, the future stars of wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. And Joe, what's it been like now after a week and a half or so since the casino show, and you're getting ready here for a Future Shock coming up? What kind of things have you been going through? Because you had the Toy Con and some other things coming up, right?
Well, couple weeks ago, we did No Escape, and then we did the Toy Con two shows the week after. So then, I guess you could say a week of rest was last weekend. But then this weekend, our crew will be handling TNA because they'll be in town for their Rebellion pay-per-view. So we'll set up Friday. They got Saturday and Sunday. And then the week after, the 28th, we'll do Future Shock. But, you know, it's nonstop working on, you know, getting the audio fixed and working with the stream, and then having to deal with, hey, we got the anniversary coming up in June, and then the schedule, and then there's AEW weekend, but the weekend's really not a weekend. It's a show on Saturday and Sunday, and there's no GCW in town. So what do we do? And we kind of settled on a Friday night show and probably a Sunday noon show, probably a Future Shock, just because, you know, there's far less wrestling fans in town on, say, Friday, because AEW is not here on the Wednesday like they were last year. So it's trying to adjust to what we were going to do. You know, we were hoping to do a Mecca, maybe a Women's Future Legends tournament, a Natural Born Killers. So we kind of have to scale down because it's foolish to throw money out to say, hey, let's do five different shows. But there's none of those fans that are traveling from around the United States to be here for AEW. At best, they're coming in maybe Friday night for the weekend, but right. You know, Collision is Saturday at 4. Well, then after Collision ends at 6, they're going to do the Ring of Honor tapings and then whatever. So if you get there at 4 and the taping starts at 5 and the taping ends at 7 for Collision, and then you do two more hours, you're at 9. You know, it's kind of really hard to do something at 11 p.m. Now, maybe if GCW was there and was a Joey Janela midnight type show, absolutely.
Right.
But, you know, there isn't a lot of options when it comes to that. So, you know, our guy Ed's doing his Poter show and the Wrestling Observer's doing the Saturday afternoon. And they locked that in, so I can't be like, oh, hey, guys, sorry, find a new venue. We're kicking you out because we're doing a show on the Saturday. So, you know, it brings an income to to FSW, and Ed's easy to deal with. You know, he's a little kooky, but he's easy to deal with. And, you know, a lot of the girls that we use are going to get work. You know, he's right. Got Viva, and he's got Maz, and he's got Rochelle, and he's got Brittany, and he's got Alice Blair, and he, you know, I got J-Rod for him. And so it's a large list of FSW contingent or women we use that are going to get a good payday. So, you know, we'll be there to assist. on that. So there'll still be, you know, three shows that weekend on top of the AEW. We just have to not go crazy. You know, we can't be bringing in all these named guys because it used to be a lot easier. GCW was here. But when I talked with Brett about the weekend, he was mistaken. For some reason, he thought AEW weekend was the next weekend. So he ended up booking a show in Chicago on the Saturday. And then he was scrambling to try to get something Friday, but without the Silver Nugget, for what they're looking to do, they didn't have a lot of options. And the one option that we did come up with, turns out they were booked that day. So, you know, we're talking again. We're trying to get GCW out here. Again, it's a tight squeeze. They're going to be in Japan, day off, then in LA, and then they're looking to do something, I believe, in August. So, you know, we're finding out some stuff for them, which, again, you know, we love to help, but we also love to participate. And by them being here on a Sunday and in LA on a Saturday, it doesn't really make a good opportunity for FSW GCW3. That we're still looking to get on the books.
You know, when you think about that in terms of that perspective of what AEW was doing versus what they are doing now, in terms of, you know, it was a big deal. The first one, the second one was, you know, still fairly big. But, you know, with the way it's now compacted, I mean, how does that affect the independent business? Because we see what happens at WrestleMania, right? It's Mania. It's
Mania, yes.
Yeah. So I think, you know, is it just a question of AEW having that momentum slow down a little bit and having this new TV show that, you know, is essentially, you know, they're not running on Wednesday. It just kind of, it feels like it makes no sense to, you know, just come in for the Saturday and the Sunday, but.
Well, it isn't. Well, they're doing Wednesday, I believe, in Phoenix. So it isn't like, you know, it's any different. Last year, they only did Wednesday and Sunday. So after Wednesday, most of the wrestlers left and then came back Friday or Saturday. And then they did the weekend activities. And there was a lot of the weekend activities where, you know, Kazarian's band's playing in town or something. And there's karaoke and GCW stuff's doing things where, you know, I remember they were having some events that went along with it. So you had two major companies in town with GCW, who brings their own fans, right, and AEW. And we piggyback off that. And now those fans aren't around Thursday when we do a show Thursday because there's people around Wednesday.
Right. In terms of ToyCon, you mentioned you had the shows. How did that go? How did you feel it turned out? And were the ToyCon people happy with how everything turned out, considering Brian Cage was injured?
Well, first and foremost, the ToyCon people, they were very happy with everything. It became difficult, you know, when we did it the last time we did it, pandemic time, and everything was wrapping up. But they had Tessa Blanchard as the bring in, but Rey Mysterio was there signing that day, and Sting wasn't showing up till Sunday, and we were doing Friday and Saturday. So from what I understand, they had a huge turnout for Sting. Well, it probably would have been beneficial for us to be there. And it was kind of a decision that was made when we were discussing it, which 2 days. Well, you're thinking, hey, Friday and Saturday, because you throw WrestleMania into the mix. Right. So if WrestleMania is going on Saturday at like 4, we're not going to do a Saturday show at 6 o'clock because wrestling fans are going to be wanting to watch WrestleMania. Understood. So right. We did the Friday night, and it was the first night of the ToyCon, so it was relatively slow. And, you know, we had fans there. We didn't have a huge – we didn't have very many of the FSW, you know, fans because, again, if you're a wrestling fan, it was a smaller show. We did five matches the first night, and we did sixth to second afternoon. And it was funny because Saturday afternoon was a much bigger turnout because there was way more people there. And all of a sudden they gather around, and that's the entertainment. So, of course, they're going to watch it. And, you know, it was fine. We ended up featuring some of the younger talent, but they also got to see Danny Limelight versus Chris Bay, which was, you know, an awesome match that we have not seen in FSW before. So, you know, hopefully we made some new fans. You know, the ToyCon thing was a little clunky as we were setting everything up and trying to get things done. And then Foley canceled. So he was supposed to be there during the afternoon on Saturday. But if he cancels, then, you know, Ziggler got announced during our show. They announced Ziggler was going to be there tomorrow. But you're talking to a lot of non-wrestling fans. So from what I understood, a lot of people didn't come out for Dolph Ziggler, which I'm pretty sure he would have had a big line if a month ago they would announce Dolph Ziggler was going to be there.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, so, and that's no fault of their own. You know, they stepped up and got a very suitable replacement, and they probably paid a lot of money to bring in Dolph Ziggler that, you know, Dolph still got paid. You know, we feel bad for Dolph, you know, didn't have a lot of people signing. And it was like, well, Dolph pretty much got paid, you know. And yeah, he probably would have made more if there was more people there, but he probably got, you know, the good old downside guarantee. You know, Sting wasn't signing there, and it would be, hey, Sting, we're going to pay you X amount of dollars per autograph. It's like, no, what's your fee? Oh, okay, we're paying that, and now we're hoping that it's going to bring people into the ToyCon. So, unfortunately for the ToyCon, you know, they tried to make good, and I'm just not sure that they got their money back, but I think for goodwill, you know, it was great. But I said, hey, next year, man, let me be involved. Let's figure this out. There's a lot of middle-of-the-road guys, people that live out here, that you could get them for a good fee, as well as having them wrestle on the show. And now we're building it into being a big, big show. Right. This was not a big show. You know, we had a big match.
Yeah, exactly. And what was it like for the crowd? Was, you know, did you have people who did stick around, or did you have a lot of just kind of foot traffic in and out?
No, it was more people standing around, actually watching it, grabbing a seat, things like that. But watching the matches with the younger guys, you know, I had a lot of specific critiques on them. And it's right. Like, okay, you're dealing with the crowd that the majority of them are not wrestling fans. They just want to be entertained. And what you guys don't get and you don't listen to is, you know, Sin Bodhi preaching about calling in the ring and you know, adjusting on the fly. And the younger talent sometimes like, yeah. And you know, I'll usually joke, you know, before the doors open. I'm like, hey, guys, doors are open in 10 minutes. I know you've only had an hour and a half to go over your 7-minute match, but we actually have to open the doors. You can go in the back and go over the match without being in a ring. And the thing is, the people that got over were the smart people, the smart wrestlers who understood that this was a totally different crowd, that we have to interact with them. And Danny Limelight is one of the best at that. And Danny Limelight got tons of heat. And Chris Bay, of course, knows how to play to a crowd. So the atmosphere, that match, was far superior to some of the other matches because they were just having a match. And nothing was adjusted. And it was like, hey, we're going to do A, B, C, D all the way to Z. And regardless if anybody gives a fuck, that's what we're doing.
Right.
And Another guy who I'll commend on interaction, one of our newer guys, Leon Kiro. And Leon is from Rome, Italy, and he trained at Rikishi's at Knox Pro. But Leon is also one of the top cosplay Joker artists in the world. So he has, I believe, on Instagram, over 1 million followers or Jeez. Something like that. Wow. So him and his girlfriend, she does the Harley Quinn gimmick.
Right.
They understand interacting with right. cosplay people. So he was able to generate people caring, even though he had, you know, his four-way spot or he was in the Battle Royal, you know. How do you interact in a battle royal? But he kind of, you know, picked people to jaw at it and just be entertaining. And that's what the fans are looking for. Did they pop for a crazy cool move from Matt Vandegrift? Absolutely. But those were far and few in between. They right. had to be engaged because of the wrestlers engaging with them. And it's like, this is what you guys need to understand. There's different audiences for what you're doing. And everything doesn't always play. You know, they always talk about, oh, you know, does it play in Middle America? Does it play in the South? Well, in wrestling, there's kind of weird things that happen that you have to adjust, like being in a food court and doing a lucha event.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's good training too, right? I mean, you know, that's the thing is that the kids, you know, are getting on the fly lessons about, you know, how to adapt. When you look at the Future Shock, obviously the idea is to get people in there who, you know, are friends, family, etc. For the younger guys, that creates an environment that is a very friendly environment without a lot of hustle and bustle going on. Do you think that that concept is sinking in with some of them, you know, of how to adapt a match to an actual crowd to feed off of them?
I'd like to say yes, but, you know, to be honest, disappointingly, I would say probably not. The ones that are going to go further will. The other ones, you know, that think they're better than they are, they don't need to listen to anybody, they don't need to be around, they just expect. And unfortunately, that sometimes is more than you would think.
Yeah,
where it's a higher percentage of people who even though they're progressing and getting better and they're athletic and they're able to do things, upstairs is the weakness, to where they just, as the word saying goes, they just don't get it. You know, it's Ben and Mikey. They've been putting together some stuff, and now we're going on the Roku channel. And it's basically FSW having its own channel, to where, you know, we could do whatever we like. And, you know, they make a post. Hey, guys, you know, what would you like to see on the FSW network? And then I'm reading it and I have to laugh. Less scrambles. It's like, listen, fuckface. I'll do less scrambles and now you'll be on less shows. Because you're not Danny Limelight. You're not Hammerstone. You're not Chris Bay. You're a young guy. We're trying to get on a show. And if getting you on the show is through a scramble, and now that's painful for you because you have to try to figure out how to work with three other guys and it's so difficult, I'll just leave you off the fucking show. Like, right. That wasn't even the fucking question. What would you like to see more of? Like, hey, you know, Mondo's season 2 of his cooking show, or hey, we'd like to see this. And basically all it is shots at things that they don't like. And it's like, why didn't you say it to my face, you pricks? You know, these are guys who are getting opportunities. You know, right. And it's also dumb stuff. Oh, more Mariachi Montana matches. Okay, well, they've been on like four of the last five shows. So what are you asking for?
Right.
Like, do you even understand what the question is? It's pretty simple. People, why ask anything when you're just moronic?
Right.
And that's what you're dealing with. So it's like, why do you want to ask anybody anything?
Right. On the flip side, though, what are you seeing as the potential benefits of having it on the Roku channel?
Well, the Roku channel is available to millions of people. And yeah. I'm going to be honest. I'm not extremely high on it. I kind of think it's, well, you know, Fight TV only has X amount of subscriptions. Roku's got 100 million people. Yeah, right. But Fight TV is all people who like wrestling and combat sports. Right. So if they only have 30,000 subscribers, there's a chance all 30,000 subscribers might give a shit.
Right.
On the Roku channel that I have and I never watch, out of 10 million people, I don't think 1,000 people are going to watch it.
Right.
But it's free and it's available. So if we find 30 people who actually watch it, well, then I guess it's 30 more people than we would. So it does definitely has its benefits, but we're not throwing the eggs in the basket. Mikey's like, hey, you know, what do you think about taking Future Shock and putting it exclusively on Roku? And it's like, nope. Not that we make big money from Fight, but we have an obligation, and out of mind, out of sight. If we don't do a Future Shock there and we only have one other show, we're not going to make any money, and we're only going to be on the platform one time a month.
Right.
You know, some months we're on three. We could put Future Shock on Roku just like TNA does. I had it on there. I looked at it one day. That was the one thing I actually looked at, because now it's in my continued watching forever. And it's like Genesis 2012 and Sacrifice 2015. And it's like, Mikey, if we put Future Shock on in 2 weeks, who gives a shit? Like, it isn't like all these people are going to be like, oh, we need to watch it live.
Right.
So yeah. Whether it's a month, because I think it's a 30-day once we air it on Fight. I looked through the contract, and I could have swore it was in there, but I didn't see it. And that was also the original Fight contract in November of 2022. So I think we had to adjust it for the Fight Plus, but I haven't been able to find that contract. And I could swear, because I know we talked about it, and about how long before we were allowed to put it on there.
Right. Yeah. You know, has it changed? Have you noticed a higher percentage of people tuning in since, you know, it's switched over to the format where people don't have to pay per view?
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah.
Because at the end, we get 30 pay-per-views bought. Why would you pay $15 to watch it on pay-per-view for $15 when you can watch 12 GCW shows this month, two Revolvers, five of this, Bare Knuckles, House of Glory, and all you paid was $7.99 a month? So, as I said, so we have about 800 people have watched No Escape.
Okay.
So far. And the last pay-per-view, I think the anniversary show had upwards of about 1,500 people watching that event over time. You know, but even for No Escape, I believe we had 370 live viewers.
Views?
Yeah. So that was live.
Yeah, that's not bad at all, right?
You know, and like I was saying, you know, I'm paying D'Lo Brown to commentate in front of 30 people. Well, that doesn't brand, you know, even the good pay-per-views like with GCW, like the highest I believe we ever did was about 200. And 200 is a really good number. And yeah, what you got to understand is, yeah, we don't make 200 times 15 because of all the breakdowns, we make $5 on a pay-per-view. So we made $1,000, which is great for one pay-per-view. But I'd rather make consistently money throughout because nobody's buying Future Shock.
Right.
But we had 500 people watch Future Shock.
Right. Yeah.
And that's where it benefits. We may lose some money on the bigger pay-per-views, the No Escape, the Anniversary, Survival of the Fittest, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's 4 shows out of 50 that we do. There's more income coming in from those 46 other shows just because, you know, I just got the paperwork, you know, for this month. And No Escape didn't start till April 1st. And we're on April 16th, and we already have 200 more views for April than we did for all of March just because of No Escape.
Right.
And the ToyCon just came on because we aired it a week late. So the ToyCon numbers are just starting.
Yeah.
Because you got to understand, the live views aren't 90% of the total that you get. The live views are more like 40%. You know, like yeah, I said, sure. We had 370 live for No Escape, but we're over 800. So more people watch No Escape, not live.
Right.
So the smaller shows like the ToyCon, the taped ToyCon's going up against the live GCW or something else. You're not going to get nearly as many live views. So, you know, we got 50 views live, but you're at 200 views already. So we've quadrupled how many views we've gotten in 2 or 3 days just because they just get to watch it at their convenience. And that's what the awesomeness about Fight TV or Triller TV is.
Right. And, you know, is it, do you think that some of the way things are now with guys like Limelight being associated with Marquez, right? You know, you have a lot of these guys who are in different areas, and people tune in specifically to see, you know, someone that they like. If they're on, you know, a Vegas show, or if they're on a show in Mississippi.
Well, yeah, Danny Limelight, I guess you could say Marquez, but they don't run that often. Danny Limelight has made a name. He's made a brand for himself because he wrestles 10, 12 times a month. And, you know, he just won a belt at Booker T's Reality of Wrestling.
Right.
So he is all over the place. So Danny Limelight, and that's what you need. You need branded guys. Hey, we got Chris Bay. We got Hammerstone, you know, right. And that's the struggle when you need guys on that card, because as good as a Shogun or Ice Williams or Hero Lou are, the guy from Pittsburgh who's tuning in doesn't recognize people on the FSW show. We need to get them to recognize people on the show to watch it. Because Chris Bay or Hammerstone or Limelight are on the show, and they're like, "Oh shit, Shogun's a bad motherfucker." Oh, I like I like Ice Williams. Oh, the faction—they're a bunch of douchebags. I want to see them get their ass kicked.
Right.
And that's also how the local show started, when you bring in the Godfather and you bring in, you know, Jimmy Superfly Snuka at the beginning shows, because you're hoping wrestling fans from the past will come to a show and say, "Oh shit, this Sean Ricker guy, Brian Cage, the Reno Scum, man, there's some good wrestling on here. We're going to come to the shows regardless if Jimmy Superfly Snuka is there."
Well, if Jimmy Superfly Snuka is there, then that might be a very interesting interesting thing nowadays.
Well, nowadays, but yeah, when we first started, that was the game plan, the very first Silver Nugget show. It was Snuka Jr. against Disco with Jimmy Superfly Snuka in the corner, and the biggest pop was Superfly doing a second rope Superfly splash. And the day before, we were at the Galleria Mall for a signing. And, you know, unless it was a joint picture with Superfly and Sun, everybody was buying a Superfly picture.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, I remember it to this day. I was a real older guy, probably my age right now or whatever. And it's like, hey, by the way,
we got a little freeze up there.
Superfly when he was his age, and it was bonding the grandfather with the kid, because it was it was a cool moment. And you know, hopefully you made a wrestling fan from the little kid, and now he wants to come to the next show, and the kid's like, oh yeah, I'm watching Monday Night Raw, I love seeing the Godfather in his hose. You got to take me, Grandpa.
Boy, that just made a lot of people feel really fucking old.
Yeah. You know, I see things and it's like, man, this guy's that old now. Like, I'm seeing something I saw and I was like, dude was like 74, and I was like, man, I grew up with this guy. You know, I must have been a musician or something, but it's like this 20-year void of, like, you forget everything, and it's like, oh, shit. You know, right. I'm already getting the senior discounts, which I fully take advantage of at Station Casinos when I get half-point dinners, and, you know, I get $100 worth of food for only 50,000 points, and when they do 10 times points on Thursday and Sunday, you can get that easily in one day, 5,000 points, which now became 50, which is now worth 100.
Right.
So, but it's crazy to me to be like, man.
Yeah. And
I wish I don't know. A lot of times I think, man, if I started this at 25, where would it have been? You know, because basically I started it at 43. Because we're 15 years in, and I'm 58.
Yeah. You just got me thinking about all those hoes who are now 58 years old or so.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. So Future Shock's coming up. You have any of the matches laid out yet?
Well, yeah, we have one for sure. It's been building up. Ricky Tenacious, not very happy. One of our refs and our students, Warren, ref the match, and it got physical and kind of cost Ricky a match. And that was about it. And then the next show, Ricky wrestled, I'm not sure who it was, maybe Fox or one of our younger guys. And the referee got knocked down, and Warren came in and made the count, and Ricky went ballistic. So I guess he showed up at training and he got all bent out of shape and started screaming at Warren and got in the ring, blah, blah, blah. And Warren is going to get his debut match on April 28th.
And everyone's going to be cheering for Warren because it's
everybody. That was the biggest pop of the night when Ricky Tenacious got pinned. So there's also a card. It's weird. There's a card signing the 28th at Sam's Town. It's in the ballroom, and it's just a signing. like a random signing, some guy from California. And it's like the Boogeyman was supposed to be there. He canceled, but they got like JTG and Victoria, but they also got Brittany Brooks and they got Juicy and Chris Bay and, you know, a few others. So Brittany's going to be here anyway. And so we got a match, one of our younger talents who came from Oklahoma, Olivier Vegas, who we've seen a couple times. He recently wrestled Moz. She's going to get an opportunity to wrestle Brittany Brooks. And I talked with Juicy, who we haven't seen in a while. He was in the hospital. He was fucked up. And I guess he's good now. And Juicy's going to be there. So still figuring that out. But Juicy is going to be on a future shock. So we got Juicy and Brittany on a future shock. And then, you know, Remy Marcel, the talent relations guy, he reached out to his boy, everybody's favorite, Evan Daniels, will be returning to Future Shock along with his crew of Bryce Saturn and Damian Desire. And right now the scheduled match is Bryce Saturn and Damian Desire versus Mariachi Montaña.
Ooh.
So there's also talks of a six-man tag with adding Remy and adding Evan Daniels to that match.
Oh, wow.
So that's a possibility. Also, a guy I just talked about, Leon Kiro and his manager, Elizabeth Rage, they'll get a one-on-one match with RBJ. So, you know, we're going from there.
Yeah.
And now it's like, okay, it's mix and match. But, you know, since nobody wants some scrambles, I guess a bunch of the younger talent won't be on the show because, you know, I don't want to burden them by putting them in that match.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be horrible.
Yeah, so.
And then once we get past Future Shock, what is the next one? I know it's got a name.
Yes, Ground Zero.
That's it.
May 10th, Ground Zero. You know, new champions have been crowned at No Escape, new feuds, you know, Shogun Vanquished, Hero Lou. So we are at Ground Zero. And now there's all new possibilities of where we're going. You know, Bodhi defeated Sharp.
Right.
The question, you know, Damian Drake, however he did it, he defeated Dante King. And now it's time to move on. And now there's going to be new challengers because Ground Zero is basically setting the stage to set up for our 15th anniversary show on June 23rd. So, you know, we are definitely still in the planning stages. You know, I was in the office yesterday. A few of the talents walked in wondering what was going on. You know, some we haven't seen in a little bit. And now it's putting things together because we do know that there will be a cash in the case ladder match again at the Silverton. Hopefully the projector will be moved by then. There will be the Nick Bockwinkle Battle Royal, which is the show for the students to get on and sell tickets to be there. It'll be, you know, it's crazy, but it's a 20-man battle royal, and I have to start eliminating names. I was putting together the names already.
Wow.
So it was definitely a lot of the younger talent.
Wow.
So that have been featured on shows. You know, you got the Raw Reeses and the Oliver Kennedys and the Adrian Reigns and the Fox and the AJ and the Mariachis. You know, are they ready to have a match? Some of them are, but it's the anniversary show. It's going to be a big deal. So the question becomes, where do we mix and match? You know, obviously Shogun will be at the May 10th show. And maybe Rochelle Riveter is going to be having a celebration of her winning the women's championship, her and Moz. Yeah. You know, they should be conjoined twins at the hip.
What couldn't you theoretically have them like if Rochelle can't defend it, then Moz can, right? Because they are a tag team.
That would be interesting. A Freebird rule on a singles style.
Yeah, and a singles title, right? you know, when you look at the buildup when it comes to this much time in between a big show and another big show, as compared to having like a high octane in between, is this the time period where it's kind of up to the talent to really kind of put things out there and use social media to their advantage to kind of further stories and get things going? Is that something that, you know, they should get used to kind of doing in terms of keeping things alive and keeping fans interested?
1,000%, because the bottom line is you have to make yourself a viable entity. And that's what the issue becomes. You know, I got a crazy text the other day, and it was from a talent who hadn't been around a while. And of course, he's pitching an idea for himself. And it's like, hey, I got this idea, and I'm going to do this, and I'll beat somebody in 90. It's like, wow, that's awesome, because you're just going to disappear and now jump over everybody because now you're ready. Oh, I've been doing great things, and I'm working on this. Awesome. That doesn't fucking help me in any way.
Right.
And you think you're going to come to me? Like, I had the message a couple weeks ago, and I just totally ignored it. I'm like, is this guy like either out of his mind or he must be kidding? And then the message was, oh, hey, I'm following up. Following up on what? Like, you're fucking out of your mind. It's like sometimes it's the most delusional things that you hear. And that's great. You know, great shape, got yourself ready to roll. You're doing this, you're doing that. Hey, how about this for me? It's like, yeah, you want a name guy? You haven't been on my show in 4 months. You can pay for the name guy and you can wrestle him, but you think I'm just going to go out of my way to get you something? Like, I don't have 20 other people who feel the exact same thing as you do, except they're around and have to do what I need them to do, like a Gregory Sharp and a Jacob Austin Young and a Cody and a Remy and every motherfucker around.
Right.
Like, this ain't about you. Go start your own company.
Right.
And that's the day-to-day that you got to deal with it, that your day is set off because you got to read a message on Facebook Messenger message about somebody who has a great idea. Hey, I got a great idea. You know, if you make me the champ, it's really going to help FSW. Really? Right. How's that? You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, thanks. Like, how about you try to come down to the school and talk to me instead of you're so busy, you can't meet me in person, but I'm supposed to put a belt on you and expect you to show up at the shows. Like, so are you just going to show up like once in a blue moon? You know, hey, great idea. I'm going to put the belt on you. Okay, cool, Joe. I'll see you again in 2 months when I'm available for you. You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah. No,
you kind of contradicted yourself. If you're too busy to even meet me, why would I think that it would be smart to put a title on you?
Yeah, well, you know, because it makes all the sense in the world to that person. That's why. it is funny because of the fact that, yeah, you know, I don't understand how people don't really take that into perspective of, you know, the overall picture of things. And in some ways too, I think that there are certain people who, if you're going to have a title too, a lot of the younger guys are going to look towards you as an example of what to do. And that always becomes dangerous too if you give, you know, that responsibility to people who are not necessarily the most reliable or, you know,
And also the locker room looks at it like, what the fuck? This guy hasn't been around forever.
Right.
And now all of a sudden he's the champ. Like, what the fuck? Right. What about all the time and effort I put in?
Right. Yeah.
So.
So right now, when you look at the title picture, you know, Shogun just completed a long feud with Hiro, and you know, Shogun is progressively getting better every time he's out there. What do you see maybe as the next challenge for him?
Well, I see a few guys on the horizon myself. Obviously, Danny Limelight comes out of No Escape.
Yeah.
Number one contender. He's got to be right up there. He just beat Hammerstone. He's had a long succession of victories. Kenny King won a steel cage match against Clutch, another former partner of Shogun.
Right.
Okay. And Kenny, first ever champion, multi-time, best shape of his life.
Yeah.
If he's leading the faction, what better way than to get that heavyweight title around his waist again?
Sure.
You know, and obviously Kenny's schedule is opened up. He's not with TNA anymore, and he's not signed to a major company. So we have access to Kenny King pretty much most shows. Unless somebody booked him. So he's definitely a guy on the horizon. So those are the two right off the bat. But who wouldn't want to see a Gregory Sharp versus Shogun match?
Sure.
You know, I'd like to see a Matt Vandergriff Shogun one-on-one match.
Yeah.
So, you know, we saw Big Duke Lawrence against Shogun, and that was a tremendous match.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like Duke's still mainly in that tag team with Koa, the MK Army, so that's pretty strong. But Cody and Jake obviously have some unfinished business. What about a Tyler Bateman?
Yeah, sure.
You know, against the Shogun. Very, very interesting. And again, these matches, Danny Limelight, Shogun, Bateman, they all help Shogun. You know, that's stepping up.
Right.
And, you know, if you're not bringing in a big name guy where, you know, they wrestled Carlito and Masters.
Right.
You can't do much better than Kenny King, Danny Limelight, and Bateman, and Sharp as four guys. Yeah, you know, I've been having talks with Tito Escondido, Che Cabrera.
Yeah.
Tito versus Shogun. You know, Tito definitely has a history with MK.
Yep. Yeah. And you're right. That's a very good growth, you know, to get the opportunities against some of these guys, you know, only makes them stronger, and hopefully gets more eyes on them too.
Yeah. I'll throw out another name for you. Lives in Vegas. Tom Lawler. Always willing to work. So there is a plethora, nice big word, of talent on hand. Right. Jeff Cobb lives in Vegas.
Right. Which, you know, Jeff hasn't been around for a while. You know, someone you kind of want to see.
Yeah, I'd love to have Jeff Cobb in there. You know, I don't know if pricing or, you know, scheduling. It's kind of like TJP. Like, TJP will work when he's around, but he's in Japan so much. It's not the easiest thing to do.
I do, right. Um, you know, as we kind of get ready to wrap here for this week, you know, you put out a schedule of shows, and of course the anniversary show is coming up in June. But you do have the Hall of Fame coming back.
Coming back.
Be the night before the anniversary show. Right now, is it going to be at the school? And do you have any kind of plans or anything in mind in terms of how you see it coming together?
Yeah, you know, the only difference, the last time we did it, or all the times we did it, we would be at a casino for the anniversary show. So the ring would come down. The ring would come down because that was the only ring we had, and that was going there. So it kind of cleared up the area. You know, it's right. Hard to, like, hey, we're going to set up the ring at the Silverton, but we're also going to break down the ring at the school when we're supposed to have kids class that day.
Right.
So if we do it at the school, I'm pretty sure we're going to leave the ring up, and the bleachers are going to be kind of the seating. But what we did was, you know, we offered VIP packages, including the ticket to the anniversary. We probably, I think in the past we did, especially when we did it at the school, because we did it at that esports arena the one time, and that was fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we do it at the school, maybe we have a little, like, buffet sandwich setting, which I believe we did. I remember getting sandwiches and making them myself to do that. And it's probably like $20, and you get food, and you get, you know, sodas and water for free included in everything. You know, I guess if you want a beer, you could buy it because it's a private ceremony.
Sure.
But, you know, I'm really trying to swing big. You know, it's our 15th anniversary. And when I say swing big, I mean swing big. Like,
sure.
We're looking to bring in, you know, major leaguers, you know, and waiting to hear, you know, talk to some people already, and they're reaching out, and I've reached out to some people, you know, and, you know, we had an idea of the last one who it was going to be.
Okay.
Right. And so a few of them will still be. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
we're just trying to figure that out. I decided, you know what, it's time. You know, do the pandemic, and we were going to talk about doing it in 22 or 23, and then we didn't. And it's like, okay, you know what? We've not done it since, I believe, 2019.
Okay.
So we've had three different, yes, because I remember – and I'll give it away. In 2020, Matt Hardy was going to be inducted, and we had him scheduled.
Right.
Because Matt Hardy really helped solidify us. I wouldn't say put us on the map, but solidified us on the map. And Matt did a tremendous job. And even though we haven't seen him in years in FSW, you know, he was a major reason why we had some of the great attendance that we had. And, you know, I would love the opportunity for Jeff Hardy to induct Matt into the Hall of Fame. If not, Disco Inferno is always there, you know, so.
I think Maxwell could do it now.
We can, and then we could have Maxwell versus Disco 2.
Yes.
Or would it be 3? Because didn't they do it in TNT? Didn't they steal my idea?
Oh, yeah, they did, yeah.
Yes, they did. You're welcome.
So it kind of like the Pete Rose thing where Kane, you know, would pile drive him. Disco gets his ass kicked by the
kid. Then Santana Jackson makes the save on Disco, makes the save against Disco.
Right.
So it seems like it's been something that, you know, posting on the fan page and reaching out, that people seem to be very enthused about that opportunity again.
WrestleMania just happened. What was your opinions on...
You know you froze, by the way.
I know.
Oh, okay.
I paused it.
Okay. You kind of just segued like as if you were talking already, so okay.
Yeah, I'm that good, Joe. you know, WrestleMania happened. What did you think about how things went for Booker and for Cross and kind of Safa?
Well, you know, it was weird because I turned it on. I got to watch the first match. I left. I came back because it was still live running. I couldn't watch the Cross match. So it skipped to like where the Ricker match was, where it started LA Knight. And then, you know, I heard all the trash talking on Cross and they buried him. It was like, you know, here's a guy who had the WrestleMania moment. You know, he got to interact with Bubba Ray, you know, with Bubba Dudley. And I guess you can focus like, hey, you know, he's not winning. Oh, they buried him. It's like, you know, a burial is what was happening to Bobby Lashley. Here was a guy who was your heavyweight champion, and now he wasn't even doing anything for the last year. So he was at the pinnacle. For us, people wanted Cross to be at the pinnacle, but he never was. You know what I mean? I got to shut this dog up. Enough! Because he hears you. Right. He's blind.
Right. Right.
But he hears you. So, you know. So getting back to Cross, you know, he had his moment. He texted me earlier in the day, which was tremendous. You know, he reached out and I was very appreciative of it. And it really sinks in because, you know, you deal with so many people in this business, especially running the school with kids and all these, and they're young or whatever you want to say. But as the older you get, you've distanced yourself more and more with the mentality of a lot of people. And it can be extremely frustrating. It can be disappointing. Running the school doesn't have, you know, so many high points, you know, and one of the high points is watching Cross get signed, get Zoe get signed, Sepha get signed, Bay get signed. Those are the proud Papa moments. And the fact was, it was his very first WrestleMania that he got to be in. And you can't take that away from him. And there's still plenty of upside. And guys come in and, hey, you lost your spot because, you know, he was getting the push. He had the thing with Drew. And then Bray Wyatt came back. And then some other people came back. And all of a sudden he got pushed down. And then all of a sudden LA Knight got hot. And he kind of stagnated Cross a little bit. And they didn't have anything for him. And, you know, we would be... You know, I would have a million ideas to why I feel that it's happening, you know, but I'm not in the day to day. And it looked like they were going to do this and they looked like they were going to do that. So for him, it was a special moment.
Right.
And, you know, LA Knight beats AJ Styles. And here's a guy, you know, it isn't like, hey, he trained with us. He's 28 years old. He's 38 years old, and he finally got his big WrestleMania moment, LA Knight.
Yeah.
And 40.
And we figure that 30. It's really 42, right? 42 for LA Knight.
Well, he started with me in 2009. So that was 15 years ago. Now, I don't know if he says he's 38 or that's what I'm thinking, and maybe he's 40.
Right.
But in 2009, was he 23 years old? I don't think so. I would think you're right. Maybe he was a little older. So, okay, there's a guy pushing 40. And, you know, for Sefa, I just was reading right before I was talking to you on Busted Open, Bubba was talking about Sefa. And now's the time. But for a year and a half, he got to learn under the learning tree of Paul Heyman and didn't have to do a lot. And when I say not do a lot, meaning not have a lot of matches.
Right.
He was the enforcer. You know, he John Cena was his prize. And then after that, he went like 1-33. But that's beside the point. You know, that was supposed to be the rub, we thought. But now Reigns is going to be gone for a while. Rock ain't going to be wrestling. They brought in Tama Tonga. It looks like Jacob Fatu's going to be there any minute.
Yep.
But now there's going to, you know, Sefa's going to have to start winning matches, and he's going to have to put together longer matches. So right. Now it's going to be his time. It's really his time to shine. You know, what's up with Jimmy Uso? I saw some things, and it's like, well, he's probably still part of the bloodline, and he didn't turn. It was he messed up, and he got reprimanded for it, and now we go back to normal. But it'll be interesting to see, because I saw, hey, Tama and Jacob Fatu might be a tag team moving forward, you know. But they spiced it up because they brought in all these new people and in and out. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. And what's next in the chapter, you know, for Zoe, she didn't get that opportunity. You know, I thought maybe there was a shot they were going to put the tag belts on them.
Right.
And you're kind of keeping them together. So I'm not sure what the future lies, because I believe they've had like two opportunities already and they haven't cashed in to become the women's tag champions. And, you know, before this, it looked like Zoe was on a trajectory to be a top singles wrestler. So, but I get it. There's a log jam up there. You know, you got Charlotte and you got Asuka and you got Io Sky and you got Bayley and you got and Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair. And then it's like, Zoe has to find her own niche.
Yeah.
And Nia Jax came back and she's been pretty dominant, and Becky Lynch. Yep. So, in reality, you know, even though we've known her for a long time, she started very young, you know, she's still not even close to 30.
Right.
So she's got plenty of time, and hopefully putting the women's belt and getting her involved in different things can get her popularity or can get her the heat that she needs, that when they do break her out, you know, she could become one of the top women breakout stars in the next year or two.
Right. Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's like sometimes you see, hey, they brought her up from NXT. They gave her a good shine in the Rumble. Blah, 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 blah. They're going to push her. And it's like, yeah, Charlotte Flair walks back in. She goes right to the top. Not that she's undeserving of it. She is. But it's hard to make a new star.
Right.
Because Liv Morgan's back. And is Alexa Bliss coming back? And it looks like, I'm excited just to hear the word Bo Dallas may be coming back.
Yeah.
You know, because there was never a bigger fan. And even if it's his Uncle Howdy, as Bo Dallas, you know, I think he's a tremendous talent.
Yep.
As I said, if he ever wanted to do indies, he'd be the FSW heavyweight champion. You know, I watched the Bray documentary, and you could see that there's a lot of unfinished business there. And the people will go apeshit if all of a sudden Braun and Alexa Bliss and Bo Dallas and now the rumors are Eric Rowan has been re-signed because he's canceled some indie gigs because of contractual obligations. Well, we know what that normally means, because contractual obligations, you don't cancel an indie show because you're working AEW or TNA or New Japan. The only time contractual issues take place is when you're signed with WWE because you can't work any other shows.
Right.
It's the only company. So right. It's definitely going to be interesting to see. You know, there was other rumors of the Cross and the other one who had that the crazy gimmick who they brought, they re-signed, brought back up, Dexter Lumis.
Oh yeah. Right.
You know, where's he been? So there's a lot of opportunities because that faction walks in the door and they're main eventers. It's sad to say, but Bo Dallas in that situation immediately becomes a main eventer. And obviously that's not how he wanted to be, you know, structured in the pecking order. Hey, and now I'm in the main event because my brother passed, but it's wrestling and it's a great story. And the Firefly Funhouse is a great tribute to Bray Wyatt and keeps him there.
Right.
And B, it's a great way to influx the talent into something to where immediately all of them will have some substance on their returns.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to see where they're going to go with it. It's exciting that everything is more popular now than ever. It's great to see. But in the long run, it looks like, that other company is still around. So at least people got jobs. So,
yeah, Jungle Boy doing well in New Japan.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you do other than play up to the villain role? You know,
right.
And that's succeeding for him. You know, I read something with Schiavone about the Young Buck stuff because people were like, oh, look, even Tony Schiavone was disgusted by them airing the footage. And it's like, my thinking is they aired the footage. It didn't really paint a horrible light. Like, there have been backstage fights since wrestling existed, since baseball existed, since anything is any sports, there's probably been backstage fights between Aerosmith or Motley Crue guys fighting each other.
Yeah,
absolutely. And two different sets of views. Jungle Boy thought this, CM Punk thought that. CM Punk was probably brought in to be kind of a leader, I guess you can say, or a guy. Like they want Danielson to be, to put the foot down on that situation.
Right.
Was it out of hand? I don't know. What did Jungle Boy say? Well, there was no audio.
Right.
Go fuck yourself. Fuck me. Fuck you. Ba, 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 ba. And then he goes and chokes him out. Samoa Joe makes the save, whatever. There's no context of what led to everything. And it was like, well, from what everybody saw, it was a scuffle.
Right.
And that was the scuffle. Now, if you showed them fucking up Kenny Omega's dog and you showed that footage, now that's what I'm interested in seeing.
Right. Exactly.
Because that was supposedly an all-out, out-of-control brawl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or was that CM Punk's dog? Was CM Punk's dog?
No. It was CM Punk's dog, and Omega got the dog out of there.
Yeah. And, you know, you listen to Kenny Omega. Hey, I got no heat with CM Punk, blah, 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 blah. So it all comes down to, I guess, the Young Bucks and Punk had the heat, whatever.
Right.
Okay. Who cares?
Right.
You know, Bret Hart and fucking Shawn Michaels hated each other's guts. Shawn Michaels goes on TV to say that Bret Hart's basically cheating on his wife, banging Sonny.
Right.
And guess what? They both became fucking champions. They got rewarded.
Right, exactly. The
real life struggles. So wrestling fans just want to be entertained. They could give a fuck what happened. And I think that if all that shit didn't go down with CM Punk, he would never be back in WWE. I don't know if they would have had any interest in him. But now, because again, 90% of the WWE fans have no idea CM Punk was doing shit in AEW. They just know their fucking hero's back.
Right.
And now he's just another guy in the long line of top guys. Right. You got CM Punk. You got Drew McIntyre. You got Seth Rollins. You got Roman Reigns. You got The Rock. You know, to me, it's crazy. I know he's the cash in the case, Damian Priest. But if I name the top 10 guys in WWE, Damian Priest wouldn't be there.
Right.
And he's their champion.
Yep.
But they'll roll with him. And they'll still sell out Raw. And they'll still sell out SmackDown.
Yep.
And I like Damian Priest. But he was at best a mid-card guy in Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
And he's the WWE heavyweight champion. And he didn't come to their company until he was at least 40.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's and Ricker will be 42 this year.
There you go. I knew he wasn't 23. I just threw out a number. Maybe that was the number from 2 years ago when he started in WWE. And I'm like, man, he's 38.
Right.
But look at that. He didn't get re-signed again until he was what? 36, 37? 38? I don't think he's been in there more than 4 years back.
Right. Yeah.
Because 4 years ago would have been the pandemic. He wasn't there during the pandemic.
Right. He signed, I think, in 21. Then.
So, So 38, 39 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. It just goes.
Yeah, his first run.
Right. Just goes to show. And
you got a shot, man.
Yeah. Well, thinking me and Gallo are going to do one last run as a tag team. So
yeah, he told me he's going to carve you up like he did Frenchie Riviera in the Bloodfest match they had in Phoenix that day.
Oh, man. All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in this week. Appreciate it. And